You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for December 12, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from Scott Walker's Molotov Cocktail Bar and Anti-Reform Temple, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal. Oh, my.
Ding, ding, ding. We have a winner. Walker is the stupidest Republican on the 2016 stage. Marco Rubio, Bobby Jindal, we have some lovely parting gifts for you.
Now, I just heard that actual screw up was from years ago.
But, you know, it's timely and we need a little
Christmas.
Christmas. Right this very minute.
It sure as hell do. Yeah.
I want to talk about 1 week ago.
Yeah.
For class.
Is it that
1 week ago? This week, Friday, last Friday.
Uh-huh.
Chris Hayes said, fuck you, Rolling Stone, on Twitter.
I know. It's pretty
impressive. Candy Crowley left CNN, and the New Republic imploded all in one day. It was a Zappadan miracle.
It was.
And the fact that the meat of our show includes none of that whatsoever
shows
you what kind of a week we've had.
Yeah. Yeah.
As someone pointed out on Twitter, it was a week where Can't Breathe and Ferguson got replaced with Torture Report.
I know.
So we have a letter here.
Yeah.
That I wanted to start off with from a listener, very nice man, a listener named Gray. I assume it's a man.
Huh? I don't know.
Signs the letter Gray. So I'd like to read this letter and then I'd like us to respond to it. It touched me.
Read away.
Hey, DG and BG. Season's greetings. I just felt a strong desire to write into you guys because of recent events. I waited for a couple of episodes hoping to hear something. I didn't hear much. Since you guys are on once a week, you don't always cover everything if it's a few days old. However, I was extremely disappointed at your lack of Ferguson, Eric Garner, Tamir Rice, etc. coverage.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are great, reliable coverage for liberal news. And for black folk, it's a red flag when good liberals have very little to say when every major city is out in the streets. And we have back-to-back-to-back-to-back murders and grand jury who returned no indictment. It was very unexpected. I was sad, but like I said, I was mostly disappointed. Anyhow, I've just dropped a very small amount via PayPal. It's not much, but I haven't gotten all my Christmas shopping done yet. I might be able to donate again just before or just after the holiday season. Either way, I hope it helps. You guys are great. Best regards, Gray. P.S., I found a used Harlan Ellison anthology at my local independent bookstore, and it's all your fault, Driftglass.
Yeah, I do that. Well, obviously, the lesson here is, if you give us money, we'll read your letter.
No, that's not the lesson.
No, that is no. I was being silly.
I think one of the lessons is, please don't rely on us for great, reliable coverage for news, because we record sometimes, like tonight, very late at night. I mean, it's almost 11 here, and on a night when we've had homework, and I'm going to just say it, bitchy teenage girls in the house, preteen girls, who I'm just on my last nerve with. It is, we are talking about just kind of what's on our mind and what's churning in our gut at the moment, and maybe we've just watched something or just talked about something that might not be the most important thing to talk about. And sometimes we make some mistakes in that regard.
Yeah.
But
honestly, sometimes things have been covered every which way.
Mm-hmm. And maybe we make too much of an assumption that everyone already knows what we know, which is not always necessarily the case. I didn't know what else to add to the conversation on this. It's not as if and frankly, I did not necessarily expect an indictment in any of these cases just because grand juries tend not to indict police officers. So and that's a horrible thing. The thing that I guess I want to say about these situations where police kill African-American men, unarmed, and then don't get an indictment is that...
Men and boys.
Men and boys, and 12-year-old boys, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then don't get indicted is that... I think it's wonderful that there are people in cities across the world that are going out in the streets and protesting this as an injustice.
Congressional staffers today.
Yeah.
All walked out.
Yep.
All walked out. Powerful statement.
Yep. What is going to fix this is a blessing and a curse, but what the people that are going to fix this are going to be attorneys.
Yeah.
And they're going to be attorneys general. And legislators, if you're lucky, and mayors and city councilmen, and if you're especially blessed, chiefs of police. And the process by which this gets fixed is going to be technical. It's going to be in legalese, and it's not going to be in a... rally speech. It's going to be done in a way that takes power away from the and I'm saying this in a boring way because the process by which this gets fixed is simply technical. We have to take the power of prosecuting and indicting a police officer away from the prosecutor who depends on that police officer for evidence. That is just a blatant conflict of interest, which causes everyone to work against the interests of justice. And you see, I'm talking and talking and talking about this, and I'm not talking in bumper stickers, and I'm not talking in about morality and justice and Bible bitch. Because I was married to the president of the Alabama ACLU for 14 years. I see this as cardboard puzzle pieces that have to be put together. And I like doing a lively podcast that's fun to record and fun to listen to. And that's a tragedy for someone that wants me to get passionate about the injustice in this case, which I am passionate about, believe me. But when I see this and I see what's happening with the grand jury, I think, oh, well, this has to be fixed by transferring power.
Right.
And the ability to prosecute, to indict and prosecute a police officer has to go to a special prosecutor. A lot of people have brought that up.
Yeah.
And in New York, particularly, one of the Cuomo boys, who's the attorney general of New York, is now wanting to take over and say, look, this needs to be done. When a cop shoots somebody, the local prosecutor is not the person who should be checking out whether the police should be indicted or not, because too much of a conflict of interest.
Right.
And this that's just true.
I'm about to make a terrible analogy.
Okay.
It is not meant to be belittling or anything. It's just, it's literally what I'm tired. You're tired. This happened last night. We had an emergency plumbing situation. It was bad.
It was $160.
It was, well, no. Yeah, that's what it was. But it was, in the end, it was, I could stand there and look at the problem and lament that it existed. And then I had to call an expert.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't really, nothing that I could do was going to fix anything. I wasn't competent to fix the problem. I didn't have the tools to fix the problem. I didn't, other than, look, this is really a fucking problem, I had to bring in an expert.
And we were blessed in that the person that came was competent. They not only came on time, they came early. And, you know, they were supposed to be there between 7 and 9. They had the problem fixed before 10 after 7.
Yeah.
And he was friendly and didn't mind teenage boy getting in the way and seeing what he was doing and explaining to this teenager what he was doing, which is all very, very nice. But it's technical. You need somebody to fix it.
Right.
Now, that does not address the issue of racism. Does not address the issue of
exactly,
you know, how long this has been going on. And I told you at lunch, I want to tell this story. I think I've told it on the podcast before, but not for a long time. 23 years ago, with Rodney King.
Yeah.
And I remember before anyone was put on trial.
If only we'd had a tape of that.
If only we had a videotape, right.
Oh, we did.
Oh, wait. And the cops used the videotape to to prove something else or to plant doubt in the jury's mind about we thought this guy was on PCP or, you know, it was just a ridiculous injustice, in my personal opinion.
Uh-huh.
But I remember before anything, all we had seen was the videotape. And this was very early on, and he had been beaten and hospitalized. And they were talking about, you know, these police officers that were involved in this who were going to be brought up on charges and what was going to happen. And I remember talking to my dad on the phone. I was living in Massachusetts at the time, and I called my dad and talked with him, as I did every once in a while. And I said to him, Dad, I am really feeling troubled about this because I feel like I live in an insulated, protected life because I'm white and middle class. And I wonder, and I was just asking my dad, I wonder if I really give a shit about Rodney King in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm so isolated from the world that he lives in. Do I really care? Am I really committed to changing anything for him? And my dad said, well, first of all, you asked that question, Fran. So, yeah, you care. You care more than the average person does because you're actually questioning your privilege.
Right.
And you're aware of it. And that's a very good start. And of course, then he patted himself on his back for raising somebody who had that awareness. That's, you know, I raised you right. Yeah. Okay. but then he said something that I've never forgotten and that I mourn and beat my chest over every time I think of it.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, something's going to be done about it.
Sure. Of course. It's going.
You know, there's a system in place that will, you don't have to take on the individual writing of this wrong because you know someone's going to do it.
Right.
And that didn't happen for Rodney King. And that didn't happen in Ferguson. And that didn't happen for Eric Garner. That isn't happening for Tamir Rice. He's not going to get up again.
No.
12-year-old little boy.
Gunned down by a cop for just rolled up on him playing with a pellet gun, killed him. Boom, boom, boom. Mm-hmm. And on tape.
Mm-hmm.
On tape.
And with the Eric Garner tape, 52% of white people believe their own eyes. 52%? Really?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, because he's big and he's black and it's scary.
And you don't see that what happened beforehand was he broke up a fight. He was actually the peacemaker on the block. I mean, he was actually doing a good deed.
Mm-hmm.
And a small, cowardly man brought in a bunch of his friends and killed him. And once upon a time, we believe this sounds eerily like Chris Hayes, speaking of people who just shook their head and not disbelief. That's the real tragedy. No one disbelieves this.
Yep.
No one really has any right to be terribly shocked that this worked out this way because this is who we are now. This is how we do. There are two sets of rules.
Well, the mayor of New York knows that.
Yeah.
Yeah. He knows his black-skinned son has to be told how to deal with the police.
Yeah, but told what? You know, I mean, told what?
Yeah, because it doesn't do any good to hold your hands up.
What did Eric Garner say? He said, don't touch
me. Yeah.
You know, I'm not doing anything. I didn't do anything wrong. Please don't do this. Boom, you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, make him white, give him an AK-47, let him wander around at a Walmart, and maybe a cop will give him a harsh word and a warning, and maybe the clerk will give him a side eye, but he gets to do that.
Mm-hmm.
If you're white in this country, if you're a fucking redneck, you get to wander around strapped to the teeth and muttering about Second Amendment solutions and muttering about your Second Amendment rights and muttering about standing your ground. And by God, you better give me my right of way. But, you know, and that is accepted. That is white privilege right there.
Mm-hmm.
White privilege is I get to walk around. You walk around with Skittles and you get killed by some fucking wannabe cop who thinks it's his right to get out of his car and fuck with you. I get to walk around with a fucking Uzi.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't get to say shit all to me. If you hassle me in the slightest, I'm going to scream tyranny, and my friends are going to come down on your neck. And that's the system we actually have now.
Well, and the background of the Second Amendment is that's exactly who's supposed to be carrying guns, is
well-regulated
militias whose purpose was to go catch runaway slaves. Mm-hmm. So it's all based on racism,
honestly,
and white supremacy.
Look at Eric Garner. I don't see a well-regulated militia there.
Nope.
I see an armed mob there.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings us to our question this week.
Mm-hmm.
I believe we talked about.
And a question that also ties right into the torture report. And we looked at lunch today at how can we talk about all of this awful stuff in a context.
Yeah. And not ignore the injustice of it and not go out of our minds, mm-hmm. because, you know, we're little people with a little microphone. Nothing we say is going to change anything. But the question we came up with at lunch today was, when was the last time the system worked?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean in any really highly pure sense.
Mm-hmm.
Native Americans have always been screwed in this country. African Americans have always been screwed in this country. So there wasn't a time when we were pure.
Yeah.
You know? Our original sin is very old and it's never going away. And it will haunt us forever because that's what original sin does. But
and this is the sin of all of us. Yeah. I mean, it's not. There's been a lot of screaming and poking and calling for Dick Cheney to be put, you know, before The Hague, and I'm all for that.
Uh-huh.
But when I think about torture and the mindset after 9/11 that allowed a lot of us to forget who we were, who we are.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I don't care anymore. I am appalled at how many Americans ran out in the street and cheered when it was determined that we had killed Osama bin Laden. It's not that I don't believe that there should be justice against someone that killed so many Americans.
Mm-hmm.
It's a question of where is the rule of law? Who decides that this is what should happen to him? How many people? And at what point do we stop celebrating violence?
Well, I'm sorry, that's a tall order.
No, I mean it.
Yeah, well, okay.
I mean it. We have, and this is Bible bitch talking. This isn't
right.
This isn't citizen outrage here. I get that there's a side of things that says yes. Citizens need to be outraged. And we, you know, every time we swear, that is an act of aggression saying, listen to us. You know, I get that. And that's
what's that nonviolent
very justified.
We all enjoy. I don't. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. But, you know, badminton isn't that violent. But
boxing, football.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. But at what point do we start to look at that? And you said original sin. At what point do we look at ourselves, look at our human state, and say, we can do better than this? And I think all of us in our day-to-day lives get angry at different things. And whether it's, you know, traffic or our kids or our spouses or our bills or whatever, or our jobs or whatever it is, you know, we lash out and we get upset and we have to practice mindfulness or yoga or whatever, classical music, whatever we have to do to get centered again, religion, whatever it is. But there's something going on in the zeitgeist of our age that says that that violence is in the air we taste, and it just more than before. And maybe not more than before. It just feels like more than before right now.
Well, it's I realize this podcast is fraught with pauses, but it's because we're thinking this stuff through.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Part of me wants to remind you mm-hmm. and our audience that Romans were violent.
Yeah.
And the Greeks were violent.
The crucifixion wasn't exactly, you know, humane punishment,
yeah.
Right?
This is who we are.
Yeah. Well, that's my point. It is
violent.
Who we are. It is. That's my point.
Right. So let me quote you Federalist 51.
Okay.
Because that's, you know,
because
that's how
I love it when you do that. Yes.
If men were angels, no government would be necessary. Men are not angels. Mm-hmm. We are violent, mm-hmm. Brutal, awful, killer apes.
Mm-hmm.
From the day we're born till the day we die. As I've said before, all men are dogs. Mm-hmm. Some of us master our doggishness better than others, but all men are born dogs.
Well, but at church last Sunday, we learned what the angels, who have no needs whatsoever, what right. do angels hope for? Peace on earth.
Yeah, of course. And so, as do we all.
So somehow we have a responsibility.
Ah.
And Jesus came to this earth for a reason, to teach us something.
Sure. And I don't, and that's,
love your enemies, love, bless them that curse you.
Yeah.
Pray for them who despitefully use and persecute you. I mean, I could go on.
See, you're quoting the Bible, I'm quoting Federalists. So, you know, I think one of us should quote The Simpsons at some point. For real. Keep this shit real, baby. No, here's my point. We are by nature violent creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And we are wired to like and enjoy violence. Therefore, we must have civilizing institutions mm-hmm. that prevent us. And that civilizing institution, the alternative to violence is called politics. Mm-hmm. You know, this is Aristotle. The only alternative to killing each other is working out our differences through politics. There really is no third choice. I mean, the third choice would be a second coming and the millennium arrives and we all evolve spontaneously into better creatures and ascend to heaven. But I don't think that's going to happen in the near future. Mm-hmm. So stuck as we are as imperfect, violent creatures, we can either resort to violence at all times, or we can control and contain that violence through an act of democratic governance, self-government. Mm-hmm. And that's what's failing us right now.
Mm-hmm.
What's leaking through is our basic ugly nature. And that's the question I was getting us to, which was, when was the last time the system worked?
Well, and go ahead and talk about that. And then I want to get into what has changed since then. And,
right.
Right. The last time the system worked. When was the last time the system worked, your class?
Well, now it makes me sound silly.
No, I don't think so.
The last time, I would argue the last time our system of government worked, when it kicked in when it needed to, was Watergate.
And I think that's true.
We had a patently corrupt institution, a patently corrupt president, law-breaking, lawless, extorted people. The break-in at the Watergate Hotel was the least of the crimes. And the system wouldn't permit it. You had Republicans mm-hmm. crying when they heard those tapes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my president wouldn't do anything like that, but he did
mm-hmm.
and wept and cried and he said he couldn't believe it.
Yep.
And how could you have done this?
And that was the last time Republicans stood up for governance yeah. over power.
Yes.
And
because they heard the tape.
Barry Goldwater was the one who went and told Nixon he had to go.
Uh-huh. They heard it on the tape. Mm-hmm. They heard their president say terrible things mm-hmm. on tape. And they couldn't believe that he had done a thing like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, I can't let you govern anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And Barry Goldwater went to tell him to resign because if he didn't resign, they were going to impeach him.
Yep.
And
Barry Goldwater was the one who was sent to do it.
We had hearings. We had videotape or we had audio tape. We had a judicial-like proceeding. We had evidence. And it reached a just conclusion. And we proceeded along the process as it should be. Now we have evidence that's vastly more decisive
mm-hmm.
than Watergate, and we just ignore it.
Yeah.
Now we have Republicans who can hear their president, who was really Dick Cheney, mm-hmm. bragging that he tortured people,
mm-hmm.
and they're proud of it.
Glad. Sure, I'd do it again. Sure, I'd do it again.
We have become savages.
Mm-hmm.
We have become mm-hmm. bestial.
And Driftglass, I lay this firmly at the feet of Roger Ailes.
Oh, I do too. I do too. But our bestiality, our savagery, our barbarity is wrapped in a flag.
Yeah.
In the tattered remnants of our Constitution, we still dress up and pretend that we're civilized,
mm-hmm.
and we're not.
Mm-hmm.
One segment of our society is truly bestial now, is truly barbaric, and revels in it. They love killing Arabs. They love seeing that black kid shot.
Oh, they can they sit well, and this is it. And Fox News tells them this week that torture was the moral choice. Right. Literally, I sound like my 12-year-old.
Yeah, I know.
Literally. Everything's literally these days.
Yeah.
But verbatim, quote, it was the moral thing to do. Yeah. Gretchen Carlson. Yeah, Gretchen Carlson said that.
Because now they're down to a binary choice.
Yep.
Either what we are doing is moral and right, or we are every bit as depraved as the liberals have always said we are.
Mm-hmm.
And we will not face that reality. Therefore, what we're doing must be moral. Mm-hmm. Therefore, the people who oppose us must be the real problem. The real racists must be the liberals. The real haters of America must be the people on the left, the people who want to hold us to account, because what we do is right and just and true, because fuck it, we say so, and we have guns. And I
guess I haven't been watching closely enough, but to me, this is the first time in my memory that I've seen a couple of Republicans balk at that. John McCain came out this week.
Yeah.
And Connor Friedersdorf, I've never hold up Connor Friedersdorf columns as being must reads and you must read this. But I posted this over at the podcast Facebook page. Connor Friedersdorf in The Atlantic made such a strong case for fact about this torture case, the graywashing of torture, and how even by the CIA's own standards, they broke the law. And should be held, accountable.
Yeah, yeah.
And they hired individuals who, for no reason, should have been in those jobs. Even by the CIA's own standards, should not have been interrogating prisoners.
Uh-huh.
And they were. So it's a wonderful article. It really made so much sense to me. I was very impressed. And kudos to Connor Friedersdorf for writing it.
For that one good article. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe he'll do another one. You know,
there
are things that can happen. And I don't know if you get Richard Viguerie's emails. He surprised a lot of us last week. I get them and read them and usually barf.
Tell people who Richard Viguerie is.
No, you tell people who Richard Viguerie is.
Okay. Well, Richard Viguerie is the godfather of conservative direct mail.
Yep, and emails. Yep.
Well, I mean, before that, he was the guy who put bulk mail together for
mm-hmm.
He created a lot of the early architecture of the political.
And now he does emails promoting himself and saying that everyone else is not a real true conservative, and he is. And he does this no true Scotsman thing on email. But he sent out an email last week, co-signed by a lot of prominent conservatives.
Uh-huh.
Asking Rick Perry not to execute a mentally ill person.
Uh-huh.
And it was co-signed by a number of people. And again, surprised the heck out of a lot of us. I forwarded it on to a few of my colleagues, and they're like, wow, there's a lot of conservatives on that list. And taking the stand that, no, killing someone who clearly has no clue mentally that they did what they did is wrong. And so there is hope in that regard in some cases.
Uh-huh. But I'm sorry, Richard Viguerie.
Oh, Richard Viguerie has not whitewashed his sins with me either.
Sorry. What?
I hope he gets his way on this one, though. I do.
I do, too. And then he'll have one less thing to explain in the afterlife. But, you know, this is what happens when you gave the keys to the car to Jerry Falwell,
mm-hmm.
and you gave the keys to the car to Roger Ailes, and you told Rush Limbaugh that he's your leader now, and we'll do whatever you say, because you tell us what we want to hear. You don't tell us the truth, but you tell us what we want to hear. You have become addicted, mm-hmm. really on a deep, deep molecular level, addicted to the lies that you're told, and you know they're lies.
It's not only that, but there is a drug. There's a mental state and then a drug, and that's supposed to fix the mental state, but what it leads to is more mental state. It's be very afraid and outraged.
Right.
Be afraid of the black president and be outraged at the IRS And here's the solution. You need to listen to more Fox News and listen to more Fear and Outrage, and that will fix it.
Yeah.
And it is a vicious cycle of exactly what we're talking about, appealing to the base instincts, appealing to the violent monkey man.
Right. Right.
In all of us.
And it's, if I may use a Star Trek metaphor.
Sure.
It's evil tribbles. Because
it's going to be the evil tribble show.
Yes, it will be. Because they're born pregnant.
Yeah. Yeah.
And every fear, every time Rush Limbaugh lays an egg in your skull, inside that egg is the base material for the next egg and the next and the next and the next. You become infected. You become a virus carrying machine.
I'm sorry, Dirk Gleff, but you've been really terrible this week with your metaphors. When you said rectal feeding was how Roger Ailes passes along information to his staff.
Yeah. Isn't it, though? Isn't it?
I mean, and then I want to thank Althea Butler, who is a regular on Nerdland, for retweeting me this week. Did you know that the St. Louis paper turned off online comments on their editorial page?
Why, Blue Gal?
Well, as I tweeted,
there were so many good and civilized people carrying on a civilized conversation in the comment section.
The St. Louis paper turned off comments because so many white racists can't turn, so many white commenters can't turn off the racism. Yeah. That's the point.
Yep. Yeah.
And so when you have to turn off comments in order to elevate the discussion, someone pointed out.
Yeah.
And then after I got that very nice retweet, another person interjected to both of us in all caps, Drift Glass.
Yeah.
Well, you know who else silenced their critics in 1933?
Oh, I don't know. Let me see. Joe Lewis? No, that's not right.
And well, you did point out that, you know, if FDR had unleashed the all caps on the Japanese in 1939.
If only FDR had used. But then, as I mentioned.
Yeah.
Sure, if FDR had used all caps technology, he might have ended World War II early. Of course. And the U.S. would have been dominant in all caps technology until the Rosenbergs would steal.
Oh, yeah.
Those all caps technology and sell it to the dirty commies.
See, the Russians. And then, the Russians had all caps technology.
Then it becomes a font race. You know? Who could get to Helvetica first?
Uh-huh.
And then it's just ugly.
You're terrible.
All around. Yeah.
You're just terrible.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know. I think I even went darker than that when we were chatting about this earlier.
You did, but we're not going to do Holocaust humor on this show, Drift Glass.
No.
Just not.
No. Hey, three Germans go into Austria. No, it's not a joke.
It's not a joke. That's terrible.
Yeah. I have no idea where we were. I think we were talking about how uncivilized.
I think we've made our point.
Well,
I want thank you, Gray, for your letter and leading us down this path because I needed to talk about this. I mean, let's talk about why Barack Obama won't clean house. Let's talk about that because that's really.
That's bothering everybody.
Bothering everybody.
Bothering me immensely.
Why? Why? First of all, this is a question that's been asked many times before. Why did Dick Cheney have operational control over the CIA, and why is no one mentioning that?
Well, I think it fits the legal definition of a coup.
Yeah.
If George Bush did not know what his CIA was doing in his name. And they were doing it, and they were doing shit that they knew would freak him out, and they deliberately didn't tell him and got clearance from some other person who was not the commander-in-chief and who was not the president of the United States, then we had a coup in this country. And we don't put it in words like that because words like that are scary as hell. But
And I personally think the reason – I'm getting back to the first question, why Barack Obama won't fire the CIA director is he'll never get another one. And if he's neutered this one – or he feels that he has to the point where, you know, I will know if you scratch your ass, so don't do anything that I don't know about.
Yeah.
Because if he fires Brennan, Congress won't give him a printer of the United States.
Right. No.
They're not gonna confirm a CIA director, not in the next 2 years. So if he needs someone heading up the CIA for the next 2 years. This is what he's got.
But you know what he can do? I mean, this is the part where I don't buy it. Mm-hmm. With the president of the United States, with Barack Obama. This is timidity to the point of cowardice.
Mm-hmm. In your opinion.
It is absolutely just inexcusable that you have not taken to the podium and said, these people deserve to go to jail. Mm-hmm. It is practically impossible to do that in this country. It is politically impossible to do that in the country because our system is so broken. Mm-hmm. But I will just tell you that it is, if I could wave a magic wand, mm-hmm. and clean this rat's nest out, mm-hmm. There was any prayer that the Congress would not impeach me. Mm-hmm. Congress wants to impeach me for parking. Mm-hmm. Congress mm-hmm. wants to impeach me for parting my hair the wrong way. Mm-hmm. If the minute I step out of this box, I'm dead. And I mean that in a political sense. They will mm-hmm. impeach me. They're going to grind my presidency to a halt anyway. But see, the flip side of that is if you know that, mm-hmm. if you know they're just going to throw broken glass at your feet for the rest, as they have done for the last 6 years, if you know you're screwed either way, mm-hmm. go out like Truman.
Yeah.
Fire his ass. Mm-hmm. Go on the radio like Truman did with MacArthur and say, this guy's insubordinate. He is not following my orders. He is not. I have a strategy. He cannot support it. I'm letting him go. Mm-hmm. And let him go make his little speech in front of Congress and talk about how awful Truman is and blah, blah, blah. Fine. But you still have the power to fire people. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Go without a CIA director. Put someone else in charge. Mm-hmm. Put an intern in your office in charge of the CIA. Do what Mayor Daley used to do. Get some graduate from the Harris School. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Who's 22 years old, and put them in charge and say, mm-hmm. By the way, you can fire anybody you want here. Mm-hmm. But start making people who aren't in your base uncomfortable. All you've done is disappoint everyone who voted for you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's really time. It's legacy time. So it's time to say, look, even if I can't put Dick Cheney in jail, Dick Cheney belongs in jail. Mm-hmm. Dick Cheney's a criminal, and because this whole defending the last administration and being deferential to the privileges of presidencies is something that your opponents will never give you, mm-hmm. ever. They haven't respected you from day one. They've shit on you since the moment you put your hand on the Bible, and it is time to stop playing nice with people who are barbarians. They're never going to civilize. The next 2 years are going to be hell on earth. You're going to get nothing done. So all you have left is your podium. All you have left is a microphone. So use it. You're really good at it. So use it. Get up and tell people in this country, Elizabeth Warren is right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Instead of trying to eke out a deal that'll let the government run for another few months while you sell out a piece of it at a time to Wall Street and campaign finance, get up and say, you know what? Elizabeth Warren's right.
This is worth it.
This is bullshit.
Yeah.
These people, you know, be the first president to say fuck in the State of the Union address. Mm-hmm. President. Mm-hmm. Say, the problem, Mr. and Mrs. America,
fuckers.
Is those fuckers over there.
Yep.
They're the problem. Mm-hmm. Imagine them hunkered down, chewing on human legs, hollow-eyed and insane, because they're basically savages. They're basically barbarians. You have a party that has become depraved, mm-hmm. top to bottom.
And fever has never broken. We keep waiting for the fever to break, and it's never going to break.
And the last time this country functioned was Watergate, because mm-hmm. we got rid of a corrupt president. Then we had a president who lied to us, who screwed our economy, who turned us into cynics and haters of our own government, who sold weapons to terrorists to support an illegal war, mm-hmm. and we let him off the hook, because wouldn't it be a shame if two Republican presidents went down in defeat? And once the barbarians knew there would never be any accountability, the clown was out of the box.
Right.
And it's been a straight shot from then until now. And the people who you can really rail on, and you'll never get an argument from us on the left, Republicans are publicly embracing their depravity.
Yeah, well,
they're
this
wearing
is the
it
thing.
With pride.
It's time to rip that page out of Newt Gingrich's book, and every time you go to a microphone, say, by the way, the people that love torture are now proposing a budget.
Right.
The people that love torture, who think torture is the moral stand to take,
think Wall Street needs more power.
Yeah, think are willing to hand over the keys of the banking industry to the banks, mm-hmm. to Wall Street. Yeah. and then pretend they didn't do it.
But the people who, because here's the thing, 50% of the people in this country are not aware this debate's even going on.
Exactly.
They're gone.
And this is Driftglass. Now that you've mentioned that.
Let me complete this arc. 50% of the people who are aware, who are adult in this country, mm-hmm. are not even aware that we tortured anybody.
Yeah.
They haven't noticed anything. They never will. They just live in a different plane of existence than you mm-hmm. and I. Mm-hmm. The Republicans have finally become pure. They have become purely who they always have been. They have become proud of their depravity. They wear it like a badge of honor. Fuck you. Yeah, we kill kids. I like it when cops kill kids. Put them in their place. What do they think? They had it coming. I like it when we torture people. Makes me feel good inside. That's who they are. Mm-hmm. And then you have these people on the left who are horrified by that. Then you have the people in the middle who continue to want to pretend there's no difference between the two.
Mm-hmm.
Who just cannot or will not. Once someone starts making Chuck Todd's life unbearably unpleasant, making him pick a side, making him putting him in the fight, if you are still allowed to hold yourself aloof from this argument and pretend that there just isn't a right side or a wrong side to it, there's just a political discussion. If you're the person who's allowing that to happen in your arena, then you indeed are part of the problem as well.
Dick Cheney's on Meet the Press this Sunday, Driftglass.
Yeah, I don't have a pair of radioactive radiation glasses.
I'm not going to watch it.
I don't have a pair enough. Well, unless the last act of that show is
citizen's arrest.
Chuck Todd turning him over to a bunch of people from The Hague.
Yeah.
Then I don't want to see it.
Put
Dick
a hood
Cheney,
over his head and carry him out. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was a question I asked on my blog. Who is our Simon Wiesenthal?
Mm-hmm.
Who will come Nazi hunt in our country for our fascists? Who will bag them up and take them away and try them in a country that will treat them like the criminals they are? Because we ain't going to do it here. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Red Foreman was the last conservative I admired. Because Red Foreman said, Jerry.
The fictional character.
Jerry, how could you pardon Nixon?
Yep.
You wanted to know how you could fucking let us down that bad. And
well,
Red
but
Foreman
this is,
and I.
This is the point I wanted to make, Driftglass, earlier, which is I don't go along with the president on recalling how traumatized America was after 9/11. Now, I get it. We were traumatized after 9/11. But hell, we don't remember how traumatized we were after Sandy Hook. And that was a lot more recently.
Yep.
And so going back and remembering how traumatized we were after 9/11, and now I feel like we're living in that Taylor Swift ditty, you know, shake it off, we just move on to the next thing. Every 5 minutes, it's a new outrage or a new thing to be afraid of or a new thing to buy, a new pair of shoes or a new phone or a new this. And we're living short-term memory all the time. So recalling that we were somehow so traumatized that therefore we made mistakes. No, I don't buy that. What the torture program was about was Dick Cheney watching 24 and deciding this was the answer to get us into war with Iraq. And I just don't buy forgiving them because we were traumatized.
No, here's the thing. I agree with you entirely on that. 9/11 did not make the people in the White House monsters.
No.
9/11 was the wound in the body that allowed the opportunistic disease that they represent to invade the body.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was the opening they needed to drag us into the horrible place they always wanted to go.
Mm-hmm. And have been planning and plotting to go.
For years.
For a decade
for
at
years.
Least. Yep.
And so the idea that, oh my goodness, you know, we just rushed. Who knew? No, fuck you. You were walking through the rubble going, figure out a way to pin this on Saddam Hussein because that's the fucking war I wanted.
Yep.
You had a philosophy and a plan and a vision of the world that predated this by a decade. Mm-hmm. And this was your chance to – this was your pooch. This was your Reichstag fire. This was your opportunity to come in and use this tremendously traumatic occasion to ram through every perverted political idea you've ever had.
And that the tragedy of our time is that Chuck Todd has an opportunity to ask that question on Sunday and he'll never do it.
and because Chuck Todd is a collaborator.
Yeah, well, and that's what's happened since Watergate as well, is the media. I was looking up how much Walter Cronkite made at the end of his career. $1 million a year.
Uh-huh.
That's it.
Uh-huh.
And I say that's it, and I practically choke on it. Because we make a tiny fraction of that amount.
Yes.
But no one, and that was 1981 when he ended his career as an anchor.
Mm-hmm.
And no one on that's an anchor on television makes that small amount of money.
No.
We bought them off.
We did.
Cable news has bought them off.
Uh-huh.
And so they are the investor class now.
Uh-huh.
The Washington, D.C. power elite is about who's in, I've said it many times, who's in your Rolodex and who will pick up the phone when you call.
Yep.
And that insular society of the coastal elites is just impervious.
Well, it's impervious.
Impervious to fact.
It's impervious. Honestly, it's impervious until we tear their walls down.
Yeah.
And it cannot last forever. It's simply impossible for it to last forever. But the race between ladders and walls keeps getting faster. You know, I mean, every now and then a little bit of us gets through to them. Every now and then, Chris Hayes, as on a tiny little cable, fourth, fifth rate cable channel, comes up with, who the hell are we now?
Mm-hmm.
Every now and then, there's a little, and part of me once does not want to believe that's just the scrap we're being tossed to prevent us from burning the country to the ground.
Yeah.
We gotta give the fucking liberals something. Let's let them have Chris Hayes for 20 minutes talking about how what a lawless country we are and bemoaning it. Let's give him Rachel Maddow talking about Paul Wolfowitz being an asshole, because Wolfowitz is actually an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
But it's those are just candy they give to us for, you know, as a reward for not putting our fists through the television and forming up a mob and storming NBC headquarters and dragging Chuck Todd in the street.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, that's coming.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really, I mean, there's a pressure wave I can sort of feel in the air. There's, you know, this feels like something's going to break.
Yeah, it does. It does.
I really, really, and this is because I really don't want it to break.
Yeah.
I would like a civilized way out of this shithole. Mm-hmm. I would like to find a nice, clear, nonviolent Martin Luther King march out of this awful place. Because when it comes down to violence, guess who wins? You know, take a look at the Eric Garner video and tell me who wins that fight.
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
So my preference is a peaceful resolution. But we cannot have a resolution to anything until the voices that are constantly being excluded from the table are at least permitted within shouting distance of the table. And Sam Donaldson is the iconic figure of this era. You know, Reagan cocking his ear and pretending he can't hear anything, and Sam Donaldson becoming famous for yelling questions that Reagan refused to answer. That's what happened after Watergate.
Mm-hmm.
He learned the lesson of Watergate. No Republican learned, oh shit, let's not commit crimes anymore. The only thing Republicans learned was burn the tapes, and if you get caught, brag about it.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
These are the monsters that came out of
that. And if you really get backed up against a corner, you know, both sides.
Yeah,
drones. Both sides. How many conservatives on Twitter this week have said, yeah, but drones.
Yeah, but drones.
You know what? Barack Obama owns drones.
Yeah, exactly.
And no one is claiming on the left at all. You know, Barack Obama was never briefed about those drones.
No.
If you want to blame Barack Obama for drones, if you don't like drones, if you're like me and you think it's immoral to use them in a non-combat situation, if you think that's immoral, you can pin that directly on Barack Obama because he did it.
He did it. Uh-huh.
And no one is making any claim otherwise.
Uh-huh.
All this prevarication of, well, you know, George Bush was never really briefed and he didn't really know and he asked not to know so that he wouldn't blab it all over the place where these secret places were, and which was in the report. I mean, we had such a nitwit of a president at that time.
Yeah.
You go ahead and blame Barack Obama for that. I do.
Uh-huh.
It's not, Chris Hayes said tonight, it's Thursday night. It's not a zero-sum game. You can hold both of those in your mind at the same time.
No, you
torture
can't.
Is abhorrent. Drones are abhorrent.
But they're but they're not the same thing.
They're not this the is, same thing.
This
and,
is what
and
I, yeah.
The people on Twitter who say, yeah, but drones.
Yeah.
And why aren't you talking about drones? I'm happy to talk about drones. Mm-hmm. You're not willing. You, Teacot, are not willing to say, I hate torture and my president did it. And my White House did it. And the people I voted for twice did it.
And there's
I have some culpability for that.
And there's a series of treaties, including the UN Convention Against Torture, that we have signed that says specifically this shit we don't do.
And Reagan any country that signed.
That Reagan, well, yep. Reagan proposed. And I believe I was corrected. It was signed in 88 or 92. Oh. But he put it in front of Congress. I mean, this was Reagan's fingerprints were all over this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And part of it
and
was.
And he wanted leaders to be held responsible.
Exactly. He wanted Dick Cheney to go to jail.
Yeah.
Ronald Reagan wanted people like Dick Cheney to go to fucking jail. Real jail. Mm-hmm. Real concrete wall. You don't get to get out ever jail for doing the shit Cheney did. And that is an irreconcilable moment in the conservative mind. And therefore, they just don't think about it. They just say, well, what about? What about over here? And I got to say, one of the things that does predictably piss me off about this sort of thing is every large tragedy is a spotlight. And every spotlight becomes an opportunity for everyone to rush their pet issues into the light to get them
under
a little
the Christmas
illumination.
Tree. Right, right.
So torture becomes everything else because everything else is bad too.
Yeah.
Well, and everything else becomes a way of doing nothing at all because you can't solve everything else all at once. But it's a pretty clear-cut issue. You know, we said we will never torture people. We never said we would never drone people. You know, this is that is a tool of warfare. It might be a terrible one. We might be promiscuous in using it. It might be wrong to do, but it's a separate issue than taking a shackled person in a cage that cannot hurt you and tormenting them for years and finding out, oh, fuck it, we got that wrong. And doing it on purpose to that person individually and specifically against the convention you signed that you swore you would never, ever, ever do that shit.
But what about that poor woman from the Tea Party who got a letter from the IRS and cried in front of Paul Ryan?
I know. And what about poor Cliven Bundy?
And poor Cliven Bundy.
Who very nearly had to pay his taxes until his friends shoved guns in the government's faces and they went away.
Them. Yeah.
So yeah, but what about that, listen for that, because that is there are lots of legitimate issues out there, and I don't blame people for being impatient that theirs are not being the ones being taken care of right now. But listen carefully and you will notice the people who don't want to talk about subject A always bring in subject B.
Yeah.
Or both sides. Both sides, both sides, both sides. Because nothing ever gets solved because everyone's equally wrong.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Juno. Juno is one tough kitty. He is a world-class survivor and can tell you about the coyote that got away. Okay then, Juno. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! And I bought you Batman stamps today.
You did.
They were awesome.
You did. You did.
At the post office. I did that. Mm-hmm.
Letter on the air.
Letter on the air. Unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford a espresso beverage for yourself, buy one for us by donating $5 to our podcast at professionalleft.blogspot.com. There is an address where you can mail a check or a PayPal button. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that. We deeply appreciate it.
I have two quick additions.
Yeah.
The first is I want to thank everyone who gave on Giving Tuesday.
Oh, yeah, the Hope Institute. Yeah.
I don't know exactly what they got or how much, but I know it was something, and I know you did it, so I'm very much appreciative of the fact that you did that. So thank you from the bottom of my heart. And the second is one of our listeners, a very kind person and a much better man than I will ever be, wrote me a very nice letter and asked me not to use a certain epithet
the air.
And I believe I don't find myself censored or constrained because you and I and everyone else, we personally own all 300,000 words in the English language. Mm-hmm. They're my property. I own them all. So I don't feel bad about one of them being left out of the parade this time. So I honored his request, and I will attempt to do so because he made a very reasonable argument why I should not use that particular word. And I'm not going to say it because that would violate my rule.
So, well, but I think the core point of his argument was to be more specific in your criticism of people and not just vaguely dehumanize the other side.
And he had had a good experience with converting someone.
Yeah, from a conservative way of thinking to a more reasonable way of thinking. Yeah. Yes, he
had. I had one too in my life. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I will say this. The conservative that I bumped into the independent column didn't do it because of me personally.
Right.
He did it because of life circumstance and because of a change in his the way he viewed his friends and colleagues, people he'd grown up with the whole time. But I think I can say humbly that I laid the groundwork. I laid the track he could follow to get out of his hole.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? That's a pretty good thing. I can go to hell with that. So, Blue Gal, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, the Internet Kitties would also like to trend on Twitter, so hashtag fuck you, Cat Fancy Magazine.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Because I have an interesting science fiction university for you.
You do, do you?
I do. Okay. I figured that this week we should do Colbert Report trivia.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, because the show's ending soon, and we love Stephen Colbert, so I thought I would go and find on the internet some Stephen Colbert trivia and give it to you and see how you did.
But it's not science fiction.
Yeah, right.
But it's not Tuesday. It's not science fiction.
All right, here we go.
Okay,
Number one, of which show is the Colbert Report a satirical spoof?
Many, but it's mostly the O'Reilly Factor.
The O'Reilly Factor.
Uh-huh. Number two. Papa Bear. It's Papa Bear.
Shh, that might be a question later. Don't add any additional information.
I'm sorry.
Number two, what is the name of the space hero for which Colbert provides the voice in the animated episodes?
Give me the first name.
No.
I want to say Zap Brannigan, but that's not it.
It's Tech Jansen.
That's right. These are the Tech Jansen.
Tech Jansen. Alpha Squad 7. Lady Nocturne. Tech Jansen Adventure. Yes. Okay.
That was on the tip of my tongue. I just couldn't quite distinguish that between his mail order sperm. So.
What letter of the alphabet is Colbert's desk shaped like?
Giant C.
There's the letter C all over the place on his show. Yes.
If you look carefully, you might notice the letter C on his set somewhere. Yes.
Number four is a true or false.
Oh, okay.
In 2006, a bridge in Hungary was named after Stephen Colbert. True or false?
That is true.
No, that is false. Colbert fans bombarded the voting website and won the first round of voting.
That's right. I remember the contest. I assumed, being Stephen Colbert, he would win.
Mm-hmm.
But I do remember the contest.
However, the Hungarian ambassador to the United States announced on the show that in order to be named have this bridge named after him, Colbert must meet two requirements. He must fluently speak Hungarian and he must be dead. Later, it was announced that the bridge would be named the Megyeri Bridge, Megyeri. Okay. Obviously, after a dead person who at one time fluently spoke Hungarian, but probably not after he was dead. Okay. I'll give you points if you can name two, but the question is, name three recurring segments on the Colbert Report.
Well, the threat down is one of them.
Good one. Yeah.
And, see you in health.
Self, very good.
You want me to go for a few more?
Yeah, sure.
There's the Janssen Pharmaceutical.
Janssen Pharmaceuticals. I think that's... Isn't that the health one also brought to you by...
And The Word.
The Word.
Is a very fine one.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the ones that are not recurring segments, but he says they are. So Stephen Colbert, 2014 Victory Lap.
Well, I'm thinking more along the lines of tip of the hat, wag of the finger.
Uh-huh.
Is one. And what's the eating one? The food.
Food for thought.
Food for like thought. That.
Food for, yeah.
That's another one.
But it's not really. And my opponent.
Food for thought, thought for food, I think is what it's called.
And yeah. And noble opponent or.
Yes. Debating himself when he's debating himself. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good
one. I'm going to miss the Colbert Report a lot because the Colbert Report is the single most awesomely, consistently awesome thing on television.
All right. What word did Colbert invent that was named Word of the Year for 2006?
Oh, truthiness.
Truthiness.
Yeah, a truly great word, an era-defining word.
Yes, truth that comes from the gut, not books. All right. And we missed this one. What is the name of the 435-part series on the show?
Better Know a District.
Better Know a District. We missed that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, number 8. What does Stephen Colbert believe are godless killing machines without a soul?
Other than liberals, I believe bears.
Bears, that's
bears.
Right.
There's no greater threat to America than bears.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And which recurring character on the Colbert Report is the show's director?
Show's director?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Jimmy.
Jimmy. Jimmy.
That's right.
And that is director Jim Hoskinson. Jim. Uh-huh. Or sometimes known as Jim.
Jim. Mm-hmm.
And the final one is the last one is a true or false.
Huh?
True or false, George Lucas won the green screen challenge.
I'm going to say false.
That is false.
Uh-huh.
Colbert ended the green screen challenge announcing the winner the day George Lucas came on the show. The creator of Star Wars lost 39.9 points to 40 points. That was one of my favorites, was when Colbert had the green screen challenge and then John McCain spoke in front of a green screen.
Yes, yes. Oh, many of us had a mighty fine time that week, I must say.
Yeah.
That was high times for the graphic artists out there.
Well, in addition to all the other bad news we have going on, there's only a few more episodes of the Colbert Report, and we are going to miss it. Colbert will be poor.
We are.
The T is silent.
We're actually missing it tonight.
We are, because we're recording this podcast. Thanks.
All right. Love you.
Bye. Love you, too.